Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. My guest for this episode is Misha, CEO of Macrofab, a Houston startup that's optimizing the electronics manufacturing process. Over the past year or so, supply chains have been greatly affected by tariffs, the pandemic, and all sorts of challenges. Misha and I discuss how this has provided an opportunity to grow his business after Macrofab recently raised its $15 million Series B. Hi, Misha. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Natalie, thanks for having me.
Well, it's so good to catch up with you because you really are one of the power players in Houston innovation. And, you know, for those who might not know you, I'm sure it's a small group. Tell us a little bit about who you are and, you know, your career in tech and entrepreneurship, you know, from Alert Logic to now Macrofab.
You know, when you say a power player, I think I've been around for a while. But, yeah, my Macrofab team has known each other for quite some time. We started another company here in Houston called Alert Logic. I stayed with Alert Logic the longest out of all of us. So started in my house and right around 2002 timeframe, had a great run with it. The company still has about 700 employees and maybe $140 million in revenue. So the business is doing great. And I stayed through the exit. We ended up selling the business to a private equity firm. But had a great run with it. We got it well above $100 million. So it was really fascinating to see a business and scale it in Houston through every stage. I was the founding CEO for the first 4 years and then chief technology officer for another 4 years. Chief strategy officer, ran marketing for a while. There were very few things I didn't do at Alert Logic. So it was a great proving ground for what I do now. I joined Macrofab as CEO about 3 years ago, but it was started by one of the co-founders we had at Alert Logic. The guy's name is Chris Church. Chris is one of the smartest guys I know, was always a polymath, but was always a software guy, but at some point in his journey, took a left turn and started building electronics. He became a roboticist and started a company here in Houston called Dynamic Perception, which was really exciting, actually. I wasn't involved in that business, but it was a motion control robotics product. So if you've seen House of Cards or Dancing with the Stars, chances are those really cool shots where they do stop motion animation or kind of compressed time, that's usually done with his robotic rigs. So he did that for about 3 years and learned a lot about electronics. You know, this is classic Chris. He did open source hardware before it was cool. Before Kickstarter, he had 1,000 pre-orders for that product. So that's how he got into electronics. And when he started Macrofab, a good number of us from the Alert Logic days became investors and stayed attached to the business for a while. We were on the board. But eventually, it was time to get the band back together, especially once the business model really started to make sense and became obvious that it was scalable. So I joined as CEO about 3 years ago at Macrofab.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about Macrofab. I know there's a couple layers to it, to electronics manufacturing. So what was the problem and how are you making this solution a profitable business?
You know, the Macrofab story has evolved quite a bit, even in the last 2 to 3 years. So last time you and I talked, mm-hmm. that was just about the time when we started to build out our marketplace for factory capacity. Original roots of the business were in a makerspace, actually. And the original problem was pretty simple. Chris watched how Amazon Web Services disrupted the data center market, but also noticed that electronics manufacturing was still very much antiquated. He's an engineer, so his main mission in life when he started Macrofab was not to ever talk to another salesperson. So he built a product that let him use software and APIs to be able to source manufacturing services, which really gave us our core technology. We at this point have a virtualization layer that allows us to take an order online from a customer, give them an instant price quote, for engineers that are spent that are really doing mid-sized to prototype projects. They don't have to talk to a sales rep if they don't want to. And we have some really exciting companies that you have been using its service for many years. We're talking about some of the companies we've all heard of. Facebook is a customer, Google is a customer, Amazon, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson. So really great companies. But in the last 3 years, we've built out an engine for those same companies to also use our manufacturing network. These are factories that the Macrofab has in its network. And they're anywhere between Canada, US, and Mexico. And what that means is that we can take a job of almost any size. We can build for customers in parallel factories as opposed to just one factory. So we can do things that other manufacturers, traditional manufacturers, can't. And that's because the software platform enables us to go do that, right? Our platform knows what kind of machines they have on the floor, what kind of processes they can handle. We can break up those jobs and run them in parallel, then reassemble them again. So it's an electronics manufacturing platform. And you know, the way we feel like it's going to evolve over time is we think everything's going to look like a cloud service in the future. So everything's going to be software driven and API addressable. We're staking a claim to electronics manufacturing being one of those areas. And we're still the only company doing so. There are some companies that are similar to us that are doing this for plastics and metals. So you can source manufacturing in a digital way for plastics, metals, injection molding, and things like that. But for electronics, Macrofab is really one of the only companies out there.
So it's really exciting to see the evolution of Macrofab over the years. And of course, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today is because y'all are fresh off of a $15 million Series B round. And I want to talk a little bit about the timing of that in a few minutes. But you know, how did this raise go? How did it come about? And tell me a little bit about some of the investors you have now.
Yeah, you know, we actually anticipated raising our Series B about a year ago because we started our process for Series B right before the pandemic hit. So obviously, COVID-19 was a rude surprise. And, you know, we are in a supply chain world. And in fact, we saw the shutdowns earlier than everybody else. A lot of our, you know, we primarily do manufacturing in North America. So we have factories all over the continent, US, Canada, Mexico, as I mentioned. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you're building. Materials and at least some part of your supply chain always goes through Asia. So we actually saw China shut down very early on last year. And that disrupted you know, first half of the year for us. We were anticipating growing by about 100% last year in the first half of the year and ended up shrinking by about 4%, which was unfortunate. But considering that we exited that crisis and went right back to growth in the second half of the year, there are a lot of companies that didn't have the same luxury. They, you know, ended up having their businesses destroyed. So last year we went into a defensive crouch, got some additional capital to keep the lights on. Most importantly, wanted to make sure that the team was safe and we continued to operate. We were an essential business, so even with the shutdowns, we sent all of our staff home that was non-essential, but we have an operation that's physical. We have people on the factory floor. We have people in kitting, supply chain. They're always at the facility. So I actually ended up bunking with them. So the raise came about a year later because we really reignited our growth in the second half of 2020, just as the economy started to reopen. Went right back to growth again. So we clocked in at about 100% growth in the second half of the year. And that's really what led to our ability to go close the most recent round with Edison Partners and Altium. So in a lot of ways, the concepts that we've been talking about actually crystallized during the pandemic because a lot of our customers started to realize that, you know, for a lot of people, it was theoretical that supply chain resiliency is something that's important. People were starting to think about it. And when you're talking to somebody, just intellectually, they recognize that single sourcing from a country halfway around the world may not be the best possible solution. And it doesn't even have to be China, right? It could be single sourcing from United States, right? When you have all your eggs in one basket, you're relying on one factory. A lot of people realize sooner or later that they're going to have a break in their supply chain. We've seen nothing but breaks in supply chain for the last 5 years. It started with tariffs. It followed on with the pandemic and shutdowns, which started in China and followed through all over the world. So supply chains really haven't recovered. If anything, things have gotten worse. So it's a perfect storm of customers realizing that they really have to rethink the way that they source products. And I think that underscored the conviction that our investors had in funding our Series B. Edison Partners is a fund that's been around for a very long time, and they get involved at the growth stage when the business is fully formed but hasn't really started scaling dramatically yet. So the business model is locked down, and you know where to go pour gasoline on the fire. So Edison came in as the lead investor, and then Altium came in very quickly behind them to fill out that round. So we did about $15 million. The 10 of that came from Edison. Another 4 came from Altium. And Altium is a strategic investor, right? Altium is a software company, but they also realize that we're all heading towards a world where you may design your product and software, but you should also be aiming to go extend that software experience all the way to manufacturing phases. Eventually, we have to digitize the entire supply chain. And right now, most of the supply chain is still undigitized. We're talking about people picking up the phone and sending each other PDFs and shooting off a lot of emails, a lot of conference calls. In a lot of ways, our entire universe at this point is digital when it comes to our personal lives. There's not even travel agents anymore, right? You buy everything online, in some cases through marketplaces. But that's not hasn't happened yet with manufacturing, so Altium has that conviction as well. So the objective for us is to keep growing, but grow faster, right? In fact, the market is large enough that we believe that 100% growth is just the baseline. So we intend to find ways to grow significantly faster than that.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like as much as, you know, the pandemic and the situation manufacturing has been in over the past few years, as much as a step back it felt like, it seems like it's also a really great opportunity now for MacroFab to kind of fill in the needs of this. And so, you know, with these new partners and with the fresh funds, how are you going to deploy that capital? And what does it really mean for MacroFab's growth?
You know, a lot of us hiring, right? And that seems like an obvious answer, but think about it this way. When you're doubling the company in size in terms of revenue every year, you can't go hire people as you're bringing on new customers. In fact, the faster you grow, the more you have to invest into your business and make sure that your team is in place, fully trained and ready to execute before the revenue shows up. And that's the reason why so many fast-growing companies choose to go the venture capital route is because once you make those promises to customers, especially in our business, right, we're talking about one of the most complex services there is. We're doing electronics assembly. A lot of things can go wrong. So the teams have to be in place and ready to go and executing from day one when we sign up big customers. And we've seen that with our customers over the last couple of years. We've gone from customers placing just kind of here and there orders through our self-service interface, you know, maybe spending $5,000, $10,000 a piece, to all of a sudden customers spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, to customers spending millions of dollars, right? And when that happens, you have to make sure that the operational base is rock solid. Same way, we really have to think about the business the same way as Amazon, right? It's really amazing what they've done. The very notion that you can order something and 4 hours later it shows up at your house these days, it's just staggering to me. We're from where we started, it used to be 7 to 10 days to get your online order. We're going to do the exact same thing in the manufacturing industry. There's going to be a lot less waiting. There's going to be a lot more software. Things that just were not possible before are going to be possible in the future, and that requires a lot of investment into people.
So for hiring, I know when I talk to entrepreneurs, this is usually one of their biggest concerns as they're growing, hiring. How is the process for you for hiring for MacroFab and growing your team?
anytime you start to scale this way, we had this at Alert Logic as well. It was I didn't really see it coming. At one point, we just did a brief survey around who was around, and it turned out half of the company at Alert Logic at one point was there for less than 12 months. And we're probably going to be at that point at MacroFab in the next couple of months as well. When you're growing that dramatically, you end up with having a lot of people join the business. It can make a great business. It could also destroy a business if you hire the wrong people, if they don't share your cultural values. This is something that really surprised me about MacroFab. This is by far the most diverse organization I've ever come across. I come out of the software world where, we thought of ourselves as diverse, but at the end of the day, there's a bunch of guys writing software, so that's just the way it is. Just objectively speaking, it wasn't like it is at MacroFab, but we have people with all political persuasions, all sorts of ethnicities. It's a very diverse environment here. And that means that we got to hire people that are just objectively good people, people you want to be around and people you want to work with. And that means that, ever since we closed the round, I'm spending all of my time in interviews, and we have a very rigorous process for making sure that people that are joining MacroFab are somebody who is a cultural fit first and foremost, but also can take us to the next level. We want to make sure that we hire people that are better than us in every sense. So hiring on all fronts, we got to build out a marketing team. So shameless plug, we're looking for a VP of marketing. Our marketing team is very, very small. We need at least 3 to 4 people on our marketing team. The software development team is getting a big boost. But every team around MacroFab, from everything from program management to production control to supply chain, there's a lot of people coming on board recently. So it's been a lot of fun, but it's also been grueling. There's been a lot of interviews.
Yeah, I'm sure. And finding those perfect people for your team can't be easy in any stage of a company's growth, for sure. What other challenges do you have on your plate, coming out of this pandemic, off of this raise? What else are you focused on? And, where are you directing the company?
This isn't just a MacroFab thing. I think the same exact thing happened with Alert Logic as well. We started the cloud cybersecurity company long before SaaS was a known concept. And, the whole notion of just giving up your data to somebody to store in the cloud was very foreign. We really didn't take off until Salesforce became a thing. And really, it was the global financial crisis in 2007. There was a major shock to the system where people all of a sudden took stock of what they were doing and started to think in a different way. My personal theory is that it's not enough to start a great business. It's not enough to deliver great value and have great technology. You sometimes need a shock to the system to get people to think about things in a different way. And we're living through one of those right now. Obviously, there's nothing to celebrate about the pandemic, but it is introducing a unique point in time for people to really rethink how things are working. So it's both an opportunity, but also a huge challenge as well. We have more and more customers, obviously, joining MacroFab as a platform as we grow, but it's also the hardest. When I talk to supply chain professionals, they're telling me this is the worst they've seen in the last 30 years. It's very difficult. We've all heard about the microchip and the semiconductor crisis. Companies like Ford are suspending production. So we're feverishly helping our customers get around those challenges. But it's not just those components. Strange things are happening, right? There's not enough container ships going between US and China, right? Before it might cost you $3,000 to run from China to US and deliver a container. Now it's 4 to 5 times more expensive, right? That's the reason why Peloton announced they're moving production to United States, because freight charges are all of a sudden entirely too expensive. If you want to use air freight, that usually relies on air traffic, right? Nobody's flying to China right now. Nobody's flying to Europe all that much. So air freight is disrupted. Raw materials are disappearing. Copper is in short demand. Silicon is in short demand. Rubber is disappearing. We're having trouble getting epoxy, right? So I think supply chain people are under a lot of stress, and that puts a lot of stress on the team at Microfab as well, our job is ultimately to build product and to deliver product faster than everybody else for people. So, it requires a special kind of person to be able to absorb that kind of pressure and get customers what they need when everybody is on the edge, right? Because every day something new is happening, there's another headline. Even when we think we know what's gonna happen, all of a sudden there is a giant tanker, wedged sideways in a Panama Canal, right? The things you don't predict, it sure seems like weird things are happening every single week these days.
Honestly, yes, it really does. And I think it's so telling, like just how when we first spoke originally, so much of our lives are surrounded by these electronics, and we don't even know how those are being made and manufactured. And it's like the same thing with our supply chains. You don't even know how many steps and emails and calls are going into this one product or this one, transit of these products. So I want to talk a little bit about manufacturing specifically in Houston. I think Houston has this opportunity to become a manufacturing hub. And I want to ask you a little bit about how you see that and how it's changed over the years.
My perspective has really shifted on manufacturing ever since I joined Microfab, mostly because I was just extremely ignorant about the whole topic. Even if we were to change nothing, and this blows my mind, right? I think electronics is the number two export out of Texas behind petroleum products, which I had no idea, right? Because that would indicate that there is a lot of manufacturing happening in Texas already. And when you really start to peel back the onion, that's true, right? This is the largest port or second largest port in the country. And it's not just imports, right? A lot of it is exports coming out of Texas. So there's actually a lot of manufacturing that happens here in Texas already, especially Houston. It's obviously a gateway to Latin America. So there's a lot of product being staged as product moves between Mexico and Texas and the rest of the country. For a lot of reasons, it feels like one of those strengths that we had in Houston that we really don't ever think about a whole lot, nor do we appreciate. And in fact, that was one of the major attractions to joining the Microfab, right? It was, the entire time I was with Alert Logic, we were essentially a cloud security company, which is a fascinating business to be in. I think it's, some days I think it's crazy to leave that behind. It's one of the most exciting industries out there. But at the end of the day, manufacturing is a giant space. It's antiquated, and there's a lot of non-digitized pain out there right now. And it's already something that Houston does really well. I just think we can do it better. I think if we combine elements of technology and software development with our inherent strength in manufacturing, I think really special things could happen. And, there are a few places in the country, I think, where this kind of business could really thrive because, and by the way, this is one of the things I don't fully understand. Like, not that anybody understands what the hell is Elon Musk is thinking, but why Tesla would be, building a factory in Austin is a bit of a mystery to me because, frankly, a lot of the materials are going to come through Houston, right? And in fact, in terms of real estate and, manufacturing facilities and rail routes, one of the largest ports in the country, this seems like a natural place to build things. So I'm surprised that we don't always win that battle of public relations and just awareness. I think there's a lot going on in Houston as it is. And in fact, I'm hopeful that as Microfab gets more successful, it becomes blindly obvious that we should be thinking well beyond just technology and thinking about how technology can affect industries like manufacturing. It's happening with energy as well, right? I think this can be a really big hub for innovation, but which isn't purely software driven. And I think that's going to be the ultimate strength for Houston. I talked to the guys over at Halliburton Labs, and their lens on life is just so different than it is in Silicon Valley, right? Like, these aren't people that build consumer electronics. These are people that are material sciences experts, and they're experts in chemicals and energy. There's a lot of areas where we need to extend technology reach into, and I think for a lot of reasons, Houston is a natural fit for those.
That's such an interesting, observation to make on Tesla and on the industry as a whole. Like, we're just not telling our story well enough between the manufacturing businesses in Houston and the, oil and gas industry. I think this all kind of touches on this mindset of hard tech versus software. And I think there's been a resurgence of focus on, you know, as we can grow and grow our software over the years, but at a certain point, we have to have this hard tech revolution. And I wonder if that's something that's on your mind as you run and lead MacroFab.
I think hard tech and biotech, right? I mean, this is, when you actually look at venture financings in Houston, you know, the software is a significant portion of it, but it feels like biotech a lot of times leads the way. So I wouldn't at all be surprised if all of a sudden 5 years from now, we looked at the way the capital is flowing into Texas, and it's not necessarily, right now it's Austin ahead of every other city in Texas, followed by Dallas, followed by Houston, followed by San Antonio. I wouldn't be surprised if Houston was kind of close second behind Austin in 5 years' time, but from very different segments, right? I wouldn't be surprised if it was from areas that involve hard tech. You know, some of it is just pure engineering based, right? There is a ton of engineers that work for the energy industry. They're fundamentally different technologists than engineers that work for the software industry. But once they start to spin out and go do something else, and especially absorb into startups, I think the virtual cycle of startup creation, this is one of the things that I really love to see about the team at Alert Logic, is not just having a one-off, right? It's really great to see that somebody from Alert Logic took off, decided to go start a business. That was Chris Church. And now, you know, we have more and more people joining this company that he really conceptualized that I frankly didn't even understand originally when I first became a seed investor. That only happens when people really work in startups and think about startups. There's there's a person at MacroFab that I was talking to couple of days ago, and she, you know, we talked about just her progression and her path forward in her career, and she said, look, until I joined MacroFab, the startup universe was something I just read about in Silicon Valley, and until I actually landed at MacroFab and started growing as a contributor here, it really wasn't obvious to me that I could possibly go do something like that, become an executive in a business like this, or start a business and become a founder. So I think long before you can do it, you have to be able to imagine yourself doing it. And I think that's one of the biggest strengths that we see in Silicon Valley, is that nobody thinks twice about not just joining a startup, but actually starting a technology startup. We need that kind of ethos to happen in Houston as well. And for that reason, I hope. I hope Matt Mullenweg, right, obviously a Houston guy that runs Automatic as a distributed company, but I hope he gets more visible. You know, the Automatic is not a, you know, they're not headquartered anywhere, at best I can tell. It was fully distributed long before it was cool and long before the pandemic. But at the end of the day, Matt's a native Houstonian, and I wish he would be more vocal about, you know, having a home base in Houston and really being a startup champion here.
Yeah, we definitely need our startup champions in Houston to push this forward. And you bring up a good point about, you know, we have these large companies that are hiring engineers. And it's like almost like our startups need to find the right formula to attract those engineers away from those, I guess, more covetable jobs. I don't know. I'm sure some big paychecks, some perks and everything. But it's almost just this mindset, right? Of changing people.
You know, the energy industry is always paid very, very well. I think it's hard. Look, if you're an engineer in Houston, and there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of engineers in Houston, if you're an engineer in Houston, you're doing really well. Our cost of living is low, salaries are high. So there's been a ton of people that really built an upper middle class life in the city, being petrochemical engineers, really just doing a variety of engineering functions. But for the last couple of years, I can't tell you the number of people I've met for whom the objective is to leave the petroleum industry behind. They just want to, they're sick of the ups and downs, and they want to go do something else. And usually, you know, it's not a surprise to me that there was a crop of startups that started when Enron got wiped out. Alert Logic was one of those, right? In some ways, I think the fact that we are moving towards greener technologies, and even, you know, the fact that Halliburton, right, has an innovation lab And they're not even deterministic about what they want to do with it, right? They're just trying to seed new technologies in general because they think it might be helpful to Halliburton's long-term mission. There's more and more established companies doing that in Houston. I wouldn't be surprised if the major innovation really happened with some of those corporate sponsors seeding that. And I hope to see more of that.
Yeah, you know, the corporations based in Houston has been a bragging point as we develop Houston's innovation ecosystem. So making sure they're connected and showing that they're they have this to offer the startups here is I think a main piece of the puzzle. So, you know, we've kind of drifted into this topic organically, but I did want to ask you about how you've observed the Houston innovation ecosystem evolve and, you know, where are we at? We've talked about jobs, we've talked about involving corporates and VC funding growth, but, you know, what's on the horizon for Houston innovation and what's been the most significant change that you've seen over the years?
Yeah, you know, I may be the single worst person to ask about the Houston innovation ecosystem, mostly just because, you know, culture-wise, we are just incredibly internally focused, and it's very difficult to build a business from the ground up, and it requires immense amount of focus and concentration. So for better or for worse, we are probably the people that are out there least, and we try, but at the end of the day, we're focused on growing the company first and foremost. I am glad to see others picking up the flag, right? And because there are people doing tremendous work out there from, you know, Greentown Labs to just various organizations around town. So I'm glad people are pushing that forward because I think it is important. But ultimately, look, I think at the end of the day, successful companies come from people starting businesses and those businesses being successful, generating some kind of a financial outcome for those founders and those founders doing another startup, right? I think that's the cycle we really need to be fostering. So I think my perspective on it is very utilitarian. I hope, and that's actively what I'll spend time on, always have, right? At Alert Logic and always will continue with Macrofab. Look, I'd love to see people, I would hate to see anybody leave Macrofab, but if they were to go somewhere, I would hope it is to start their own venture, and I'd be fully supportive of that. So I hope to see more of that. And I think ultimately it's the conviction people need that all you got to do is just go out there and start. You know, this is a place where this always blows me away. It's easier to get access to capital in Austin, but if you're an enterprise-focused company, especially if you're delivering either software solutions or business-to-business technology solutions, not consumer. I know nothing about consumer, and it also doesn't seem to be a particularly good place for consumer technologies. But for business-to-business technologies, there's really few places like Houston to be able to go sell. There's a staggering number of companies here, not just large enterprises, but also just midsize and SMBs. If you want to just look, not put any salesperson on a plane and just, you know, bootstrap something or have small amount of capital and then develop a technology solution and go sell it to somebody, there are a lot of places where you got to, like when you're in Silicon Valley, you got to get in a plane to go meet customers outside of the Valley, which is why so many Silicon Valley companies end up selling to each other. Right. That doesn't happen in Houston. In Houston, you sell to real customers, and those customers are the ones that ultimately will be just like customers that will ultimately turn you into a very, very large business. So, you know, uniquely great place to get started.
Absolutely. And I want to go back to, you know, as much as you might not be involved on the day to day with the Houston innovation ecosystem, one thing I know that's a true indicator for growth in the ecosystem is repeat entrepreneurs. And so you're proving that and you're holding down the fort for that as, you know, more of people like you come out and with their second, third, fourth businesses. So I think you're a really strong representation for that opportunity for growth for the Houston industry.
Yeah, I hope I'm doing it right. I mean, I just genuinely believe that the fact that we're here at Macrofab every day coming in and, you know, getting through all the hard times and really building a business, hopefully that's more important than, you know, my showing up at a meetup somewhere, even though I'd love to, right? But I was antisocial long before COVID. So, the whole focus on the business itself has always felt natural to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can keep opening accelerators and co-working spaces, but at the end of the day, we're only going to be as successful of a innovation ecosystem if we have companies doing well and raising funds and growing their client base. So that's what you're doing. And so I think that's a great testament to the Houston innovation ecosystem.
And I think attracting venture capital funds that don't have an investment here yet, right? So, you know, the guys over at Lion Guard closed around with Avdata Partners. You know, that's a great team. And, you know, as you might know, their first investment in Houston was with Alert Logic. So that's how, you know, this is one of the things that really doesn't get talked about, but I've seen some of the behind the scenes, you know, back channel communication. Look, there's a non-trivial number of funds that will not fund the company in Houston. And this is a really superficial thing, but, you know, partners have to go to board meetings. And if their board meetings are all in San Francisco, and then once in a while they'll take a trip to Los Angeles, you know, getting in a plane once a quarter to go to Texas, whether it's Austin, Houston, or anything, right, is just a, you know, that's not a distraction they want to take on. So there's a non-trivial number of funds out there that will not touch anything outside of their region. It could be Northeast, it could be Northwest, it could be obviously the, you know, the bulwark of Silicon Valley. So the more venture funds, and again, this is the weirdest thing in the world, but the more venture funds come here to visit their portfolio companies, come here for board meetings, oddly enough, it actually does increase the odds of them funding other companies in Houston, because simple things like, I'm already going to be in town, so we might as well meet up for a coffee, to now I have two board meetings in Houston, not one. You'd be surprised how much difference that makes. You know, venture investors don't like to advertise that aspect of it, but it's absolutely true. You know, I've had a couple of people try to introduce me to very large venture funds out there. And the private communication is like, look, it's in Houston, and I really don't do anything in Houston right now. So, you know, not that I'm opposed to it, sounds really interesting, but, you know, I got my hands full with companies nearby, you know. So proximity is a big deal. So I think bringing just more people here that aren't in Texas yet, but in Texas now, especially Houston, is a big deal.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I'm sure a lot of people haven't thought of that allure. You know, I also would like to challenge them to come try our food, because that could be another great allure. We've got really good food here. So yeah, get your meetings and some Tex-Mex.
That's right. I think we need to do kind of a crossover podcast with you and Eric, and and really talk about, and that's what a lot of people are actually missing is, you know, when we recruit, that was actually, you know, one of the things that we used to our advantage quite a bit. Alert Logic, it always seemed odd to me that people complain that it's hard to hire software developers in Houston. It actually wasn't that difficult. It's hard to hire 20-year-old developers in Houston. It's actually not difficult at all to hire 25 to 30-year-old developers in Houston. Once they have a kid or two, especially, coming this way is not, it's a no-brainer. You know, that whole thing that, like, all of a sudden their stories in Washington Post, oh my goodness, people had to work from home and they realized their home life sucks, right? So all of a sudden the entire country backed up and moved south. They all moved to Houston, Dallas, Austin, obviously, and Atlanta. Well, that's always been the case, right? Somebody who actually, you know, who has a family and wants to, you know, wants to have a great quality of life. Texas has always been a great place to go. We've always played that up, and the food scene has been a huge part of it. That's a lot of people don't realize just the immense diversity we have, not in Austin, but in Houston, right? The number of languages spoken, number of cuisines that you can find here. So we've always used it as an advantage for recruiting. I think we should use it as an advantage for startup formation.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just start sending Eric's podcast to all of the VC investors that need to come to Houston and check out our food, but also our startups that we have, for sure. Well, Misha, thanks so much. It was so great getting to catch up with you and to see MacroFab's growth over the years. So I really appreciate you joining me today.
Likewise, Natalie. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.